Hey, everybody, welcome to Pittsburgh Comic Podcast number 363. I'm a very tired Colin McMahon. We had the midnight release last night, and I'm getting too old for this.
I feel refreshed. How are you, Pat?
I'm fine.
Yeah, thanks for not coming.
Bright eye and bushy tail.
No problem. My books are still waiting here for me today.
Amazing how that worked.
You know why I got the books I wanted? Because I used a pool list. If you don't use a pool list, you're a fool!
Yeah. Just pities the fool.
Yeah? No? You don't?
I do.
Alright.
Enough of that jibba jabba.
He's got the haircut and the gold chains to go with it, so.
It's true.
That's why we don't live stream these.
He doesn't have the van, though.
No.
Could be in a garage somewhere.
No. If you had that van, you would drive that everywhere. You drive it out just to go get the mail.
It's in the middle of being outfitted for a mission. Just waiting for my welder to get done.
No, see, if you were really BA, you'd be doing your own welding.
I know, I don't know how to weld. I haven't welded since middle school.
Who the hell lets a middle schooler yeah. weld?
In middle school, there's like a rotation of, you had like,
We did shop, but I do not remember welding.
Yeah, we had wood
shop.
You had,
like, ceramics shop, Womack, like, it just was a...
And they had you doing welding.
Yeah, we had...
Did some spot welding, made a toolbox.
Damn.
We had industrial arts, but it was wood shop, and then they had us do, like, drafting. They ain't never had us hook up with a welder.
They taught us how to print.
Why'd you get your career started early?
Let's see, Philadelphia, so they'd know what we would do with a torch.
No, I'm pretty sure it's middle school. It could have been high school, but I thought it was middle school.
Oh, not doubting you. Just
it's
fairly extreme.
We poured liquid metal into molds and made things. I had a little castle at home. We got to use the table saws. Made a box, a nice box. Almost a jewelry box, but it's not really a jewelry box. It's a box for getting things.
You could put rings in it.
Sounded a little insecure there, Josh. Are you okay?
You made like
man things, not jewelry. Man things.
You made like Pinewood Derby cards, but put COP cartridges in the back and raced them.
Oh, nice, nice. Mm-hmm. Whippets? Oh wait, no, sorry.
Advanced. That was the AP class.
Okay, well, I'm, again, very tired Colin McMahon, owner of Pittsburgh Comics. Joining me tonight are...
Dave.
Spencer.
Josh.
Pat.
Now, Spencer was the only one to join us last night from this crew. We had a good turnout.
I heard it was a good time. I heard
it was fun.
I wanted to come. I planned on coming and then work from home today, but that was not possible. So I decided to stay home and get up at 5 a.m. like normal.
Not a real time.
Midnight release plus 5 a.m. wake up?
No, I hear you.
Is a real time.
No, it's not a real
time. It's not a real time.
It's on the clock, but it's not a real time.
It's not a real time you want to be up, but it is a real time.
No.
Yeah.
No, it's like the flyover state. Yes, those states exist, but 5 a.m. technically is a time that you should never see.
Actually, most of them aren't flyover. Now they're swim through.
Yeah, true. True. News.
Wow, this would be a bad podcast.
His brain just kind of clicked in. Oh, we're going to talk. Hickman. Marvel announced at C2E2 that Hickman will be doing two new X-Men books. House of X, original title, and Power of X. And they will be weekly in the sense that it'll be one, then the other, then the other.
They won't show up for a week, and then they won't show up for another week.
Then, but they'll be alternating. I haven't seen. I was looking for this online, but Ryan Higgins was saying that they're each only six issues. I couldn't find anything saying
that's
that.
Not a very big commitment.
Well, it'll be 12 issues leading into
whatever
the line wide relaunch. Everybody's assuming.
Which really worries me because the. After that 10-issue event thing that they did, the Uncanny X-Men has been really good. And I'm just worried now that this is just gonna, you know, screw all that up. Like, you know, it's finally starting to get good again, and then they're just gonna change it.
Yeah.
I just don't get why, and you know, this is not a Marvel thing, because DC does the same thing. if you bring a writer in to write a book, you don't give them multiple books with the same cast of characters. Like, okay, Hickman wants Bendis, to write two books. Go ahead, you can write two books. You get an X-Men book and maybe an Avengers book or a Hulk book or something like that. Not, here, you're going to write all the X-Men books because you can totally screw a line that way.
I was really hoping for Eternals for him, only because I could see him going nuts. That's almost like the perfect book. Ancient, you know, these old characters, Celestials, he could go completely nuts with that kind of stuff. But
surprised Dan Slott didn't do something like that. Well, because he wants to write Doctor Who. He got the Silver Surfer.
Well, he's doing Fantastic Four now, so maybe later in his run he might.
It was,
you know, you can, you know, and mess with him that way.
It was interesting. I was listening to the Contest of Challengers podcast from Challengers Comics in Chicago. And the one guy was talking about, he's like, yes, he's always a little critical of Marvel. He's like, but, you know, that yes, they are the biggest publisher. They are the biggest seller. And he basically just said, but they could be so much more. They could be so much better. And I completely agree, because, like, Fantastic Four is kind of a forgotten book at this point. After the big launch, it's just kind of there. It kind of comes out. It's not on any real schedule.
You know what, though? You can't really say that that book was ever important if you took it away for as long as you did.
Right, but it should be important. Also, like, Iron Man right now, nobody really cares. Captain America isn't doing anything. Black Panther is kind of, even X-Men right now. I think
the only one's probably, Spider-Man, right?
Spider-Man's doing well. I'm hopeful for War of Realms, but there's a lot of tie-ins. I was looking in the new book. There's 26 tie-in books,
They're all their own like separate miniseries.
It's a lot of miniseries, and then a lot of tying in. Like Venom is tying in, and Punisher, and a lot of books. So it's just a little scary just in the sheer volume of it. You know, I doubt many people are going to be going, oh, I want it all. So that makes it. Well, how many extra do I order, you know, of Squirrel Girl?
That's immediately what I thought of, too. Mm-hmm.
So that's concerning. They also announced the new Donny Cates thing, which is Absolute Carnage, coming out in August. My only concern is he's off Venom until then. So that's just a little concerning, because that book was doing really, really well, and I don't know how it's going to do now with him not on it. Because I know Cullen Bunn is writing.
Fighting Edgar Allan Poe?
I know, but look at that. I love that Gleek is surfing.
I didn't see that.
I just thought that was fantastic.
That's great.
I forget the name, Zan and Jace. Yeah.
Jaina.
But I love that Jaina is swimming through Zan.
Jan.
Gleek is surfing. I thought that was pretty funny. But yeah, certainly does look. But I mean, that's like the most Mark Russell cover you could come up with. I enjoyed that. But yeah, just worried about Venom with Cullen Bunn taking over, that it might lose some steam.
Did you see like that timeline they had where it's like,
well, like something in July, August, and then a question mark on December? Yeah.
And then
I'm
the
like,
Riddler shows up.
Yeah, Riddler shows up. Yeah, but then I'm like, well, there's a couple months here with nothing going on, so hopefully you guys have some sort of plan for something going on.
But you know what though? Why do they have to? If you just put out quality books,
event after event,
people will be like, oh, I want to read this book. Instead, you publish shit. And you're like, okay, well, we got to come up with a new event for every month to get people in here to get the books. Just write good books.
Agreed.
Because nothing in the event sticks.
What?
Okay. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be a big meanie head.
That was a big meanie head. So, yeah, DC didn't have any news. I don't even know if they were at C2E2. It's a little crazy because there was Emerald City.
What are the big Comic-Cons now, though?
Well, the problem is that you had Emerald City, and then the next week was C2E2, and then this weekend is WonderCon out in California. So it's like I can kind of understand them not wanting to send people to each one. They really shouldn't have them on consecutive weekends.
But WonderCon,
crazy.
I mean, that's their home.
So. Right. Oh, yeah. So I'm sure they'll be there. Maybe Marvel won't. I don't know. But, yeah, that's just a little intense boom, boom, boom.
Can't plan these things, Colin.
I know. I didn't plan. But, okay, let's hit. We got a lot of questions, actually. Okay, from me. For Batman's 80th, all Batman questions. Josh, are you ready?
Funk that.
Okay. Which Batman...
Why is it?
Which Batman writer-artist combo is your favorite? And which Batman issue story arc is their best work? I don't know.
So, I'm thinking Tom King. For the simple fact, if you can make Kite Man interesting, you've knocked it out of the park. Because that's really hard to do.
Yeah, I can't, off the top of my head, I can't think of a favorite.
I'm really surprised you didn't say Frank Miller.
Oh, Dark Knight Returns, yeah. Yeah. Okay, yep. Win.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm tired. I'm not a good person to be answering questions.
Batman is a bat.
Spencer?
I don't know.
Kevin Smith, Cacophony.
Yeah, I mean, I actually like those series. Maybe like Paul Dini and Justin Nguyen. Like, they had some good, like, detective and other, like, Batman, like, assistant titles. Like, I think, like, Streets of Gotham, or I think that's what it was, something like that.
I don't know if they're my favorite, but I really enjoy them. Like Jeff Loeb, Tim Sale.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Long Halloween.
I feel like I haven't read, like, enough Batman to...
We can fix that.
Says the man wearing the Batman shirt.
Well, because it's...
I get it.
It's hard to say your absolute favorite, though. There's so many good stories.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Arcs. So...
Yeah, Gates of Gotham. I really love that story.
I don't know if I can pick a favorite story, but my semi-obscure pick is back in the 90s, Norm Breyfogle. I think he was on Detective Comics, but I really liked his Batman art.
Or Tomasi and Gleason on Batman and Robin.
That was good, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Bang, Mary, Punt. Selina Kyle, Silver St. Cloud, Vicky Vale.
Not playing this game in the podcast. Yeah, sorry.
I agree. Which live-action Batmobile is your favorite? I'm going classic TV show. Yeah. I wanted that car so bad. I had a little die-cast metal one where the little cutter came out and it shot rocket launch.
So I love that car. Super not practical, though, to be around in a convertible or an open top.
I do have a deal with my wife. If I ever hit the lottery, I'm allowed to buy one.
Mm-hmm. My favorite live action, I think, is the Burton.
Yeah, 89.
Yeah. The big long nose.
Yeah.
It just looks awesome. Again, not very practical. The thing couldn't turn. He'd like shoot a grappling hook out to turn.
Well, he was trying to turn like down narrow city streets at 60 miles an hour.
Right. It was a pretty sharp turn. But yeah, that one's cool. It has armor, has a remote control. Looks badass.
The grenades.
Grenades.
The two dueling Gatling guns.
Gatling guns. Back when no one seemed to care when their live-action Batman killed people.
Batman doesn't kill, except for when
I
he does.
That. That's why I mentioned it.
All the Zack Snyder stuff.
Even like if in that movie you're going to say, like, well, maybe he didn't like actually kill anyone. It just, you know, he used the machine guns to get into Ace Chemical. But in the second Burton movie... He literally, like, has the Batmobile pivot,
mm-hmm.
go back down the ground, and then shoot the afterburner on the circus.
Well, no, it in the Axis Chemicals, he throws up the shield and drops the grenade right, you know, when everybody's standing there. So, yeah, he has no problem killing.
Well, like, in theory, they could have gotten out, I guess, in theory. They probably didn't.
No, they totally didn't.
But you don't, like, explicitly, like, see him... murder someone like you did with him catching that dude on fire. Well, I guess he could have survived, but
he's got burns over 90% of his body, but he survived. best Batman kill.
Which Batman villain is the most underrated or underutilized? I have to say, Snyder put the Riddler in a little different light during his year one story that made him much more formidable than I think has ever been portrayed. Than I think had really ever been portrayed before. He was always just kind of a goofy Riddler. Yeah. Fair enough.
Jokingly, I'd say Condiment King. But Killer Croc.
Underutilized?
I love Killer Croc.
Yeah. Do you see the busk over there? There's one of those like $25 Killer Croc busk.
I just thought he was underutilized, though.
You don't see him very much, though.
Well, he's in Suicide Squad now. Well, for a while.
But in Batman.
Oh, yeah, not in Batman.
Sure, Jack Squad.
Mercy.
Well, you already answered King Tut.
Yeah. I was like Kite Man. I don't know if I ever felt Kite Man was underutilized. Same with King Tut, I guess.
Crazy Quilt.
It was surprising that, like, if anything, overutilized, but it worked out well. It was surprisingly good with Kite Man.
Two-Face, I know they've been kind of using him a little bit more, but nothing to, like,
disagree with that one. Two-Face, I feel like they used the crap out of Two-Face for a long time there. And then after he supposedly, like, killed himself, then he was gone for a little while. But I feel like before that, he was getting used constantly.
Okay, have you ever...
Right now, no, you didn't even ask Dave.
Dave?
I have to say Egghead.
Egghead, there you go, okay.
Did you read that All-Star Batman?
So much pathos in that character. Snyder. Someone has to jump on
Snyder
that.
And JRDR?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Did you like the Two-Face arc in that?
No. Yeah, not really, no. I didn't really like that series in general.
No, it kind of sucked.
Colin is, of course, a big fan of Calendar Man.
Their parts were good. There have been some good Calendar Man stories.
Oh, Long Halloween was a Calendar Man story.
Yeah, that's true.
Have you ever danced with the devil in the pale moonlight? No.
Not that I can recall.
What fast food restaurant is Batman...
Have you ever eaten another man's rhubarb?
No, he didn't ever rub another man's rhubarb.
That's right, yeah. Eight. I guess you could hit it.
What fast food restaurant is Batman most likely to stop at on the way back home? Bye, Tim!
So, what's the name of the one
Have you rubbed another man's rhubarb, Tim?
No. I'm going to say Martha's. Oh, wait, sorry.
Have you ever almost? What? Have you ever almost?
He was invited to.
Wrong.
Just what was the question?
What fast food restaurant is Batman most likely to stop at on the way back home? I don't know. I think he's kind of used to Alfred's cooking. I don't know if he'd really do
fast food. We wouldn't
really
eat anything.
What was the fast food restaurant? The burger place.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I just don't know what the name of it is.
I agree with Spencer.
Who's smarter, Bruce Wayne or Lex Luthor?
Bruce Wayne.
You're a better tactician.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
While they're both arrogant, I feel like Lex Luthor's hubris gets in his way more often than Bruce Wayne's does.
Yeah, if he could put his ego in check, he could probably run some shit.
Yeah.
You mean like be the president?
That's a little too close to real life right now, so let's just move on to the next question.
Okay, Brandon asks, with the recent silent issue of Batman... How many other issues can you name that use that gimmick? I think G.I. Joe was one of the first to do it. Are there any earlier ones? I know Marvel did an entire month, or if not a month, a week of them, the Nuff Said month, where they were all silent issues.
Yeah.
Back in the 90s, 2000s.
No, wasn't that right? I'm thinking of the after 9/11, they had that, like...
It wasn't a silent issue. It was just a memorial issue, yeah.
I thought that was... Yeah.
Unless...
G.I. Joe 21 is just a classic of my youth.
Yeah.
That's burned into me, that...
Snake Eyes issue.
Snake Eyes versus Storm Shadow, yeah.
What is this?
Yeah, it's a little pricey, though.
$500?
What is it?
The Crisis on Infinite Earths box set? 28 pounds.
What does Marvel's new motto, "Be More Marvelous," mean to each of you? I get the sense it's just a meaningless pun. So do I.
Yeah.
I read it as "Eat your Ovaltine" kind of thing. Just
be best. Furry at the end of Captain Marvel, didn't he like the marvelous?
You know what I'm talking about, Dave?
Be best.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course.
It makes me think of be best.
I got nothing.
But
Melania
yeah.
Trump's like...
Yeah. But yeah, I think it's just kind of meaningless.
She's a comic book fan. Who knew?
James asks, I just saw The Spectre, a personal favorite of mine, is in the solicitations for Detective 1006. Do you have any supporting characters that you wish showed up more frequently? I'd like to see the Creeper show up a little bit. I think he's kind of a very underutilized character with kind of a very interesting backstory. When was the last time we saw Animal Man?
That would be nice.
We did see him like in like a cameo, kind of
like in the background,
yeah,
or something.
Recently, but I would love to see some Animal Man. However, I personally would not call Animal Man a supporting character. He can
right, right.
Story.
But I'm just
you're right. Yeah.
Maybe
not trying to denigrate him. Yes.
You know which character from the Batman books I've kind of been wondering you know, what's going on with? Not really, Duke.
No.
But I will say, like, spoiler. Bluebird.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I think she.
I think that was a very Snyder
like,
character,
I think she
though.
She kind of like retired, like.
She did, but I. The, she
yeah, somebody can pick
before,
it up.
I kind
yeah.
of like what's going on with. But yeah, also, you know, it's Stephanie Brown. We haven't seen her in quite a while. Like, she was a big deal for a while.
Yeah.
How about Rick Jones? Has he showed up anywhere?
You mean Rick James?
No.
No,
did you ever see that?
No,
that
it just dawned on me. I got
Rick
confused. Snapper Carr was in Dial H for Hero. So that was just kind of funny. But in my head, I went, oh, that's Rick
Check
Jones. So, oops.
It was not real, obviously. But that would be even better.
What?
What if Rick James
Rick
had become
James?
The Hulk instead of Rick Jones?
That would have been interesting.
It's a celebration.
Yeah.
You got anybody, Dave? Anybody you're missing?
Yeah, I always liked the character Wyatt Wingfoot. He showed up in some Fantastic Four recently with The Wedding, but he was in a lot of the John Byrne stuff. I always liked him. Even though he doesn't have any powers. Or Animal Man made me think of Bwana Beast.
You're missing Bwana Beast?
I was going to say, there was a comic
that
had that
was
him
a good issue.
In there.
Yeah, I don't remember.
It was like in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know he's he's in the terrific right
Nightwing
now,
has his own books.
No, I know, but he could do another one. He could, you know.
Dick Grayson is not in the comics right now.
Right,
yeah,
I know.
That's
Rick
true.
Is, though.
Yeah.
Lacking
but,
the K.
But, like I was saying, I know he's in the Turbics right now, but I was always a fan of Metamorpho, and I wish he would be back in the Outsiders book that's coming out. Like, that's where he needs to be right now. He doesn't need to be in the Terrifics. He needs to be in Batman and the Outsiders.
You and Sugar and Spike.
Hmm?
You and Sugar and Spike.
Yeah, that was in that Legends of Tomorrow book.
It was a while ago, though.
Yep.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind seeing some Metal Men.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yes. Come back, Mr. Johns. Do some Metal Men with Ivan Rice. Please. Okay. And then Christian asks, is anyone else concerned that the best Batman issues to come out in the last 6 months were the issues written by Josh Williamson? I know King is going somewhere, but he's taken the long road to get where he's going. And I don't.
Price
yeah,
issues?
I didn't like
the
I didn't like the Price issues that much. No. But I have not liked Nightmare. Been a little tedious.
The biggest problem I think with it is
Pig in the last one, even though it wasn't
yes,
like
it was a sequel to the Batman Elmer Fudd, yes.
yeah,
but I did enjoy that one, but overall, I have not been a big fan of the Nightmares.
No, Porky Pig was with Lex Luthor.
Going right, but he runs the bar.
Yeah, he was the bartender.
Yeah, he was the bartender in the Elmer Fudd issue.
Okay.
And then they crashed through the ceiling of the one. Yep. He had the only lines in the book.
Elmer Fudd was the like PI.
Yeah. So that's all the questions we have.
Wow.
But yeah, I'm hoping King can turn this around. I think it was a good idea, but then I think it kind of got a little derailed with him taking the break and the fill-in and yada, yada.
And yada, yada?
Yada, yada.
It's just, it was too similar to what they were doing with Detective, though.
Valiant's coming out with something that's not a miniseries?
What?
That hasn't happened in a while.
I wanted to ask
you. It's a one-shot? Oh,
wait. I wanted to ask you what you thought of the new Bloodshot series that's coming out with Thaley and Brent Booth.
Tim Seeley's on it?
I'm pretty sure that's who's doing it.
I like Tim Seeley a lot, so I'm looking forward to it. I don't love the current Bloodshot series, so, you know, we'll see. I hope that this one that's starting in the fall is a, you know, continuation of the story, not you know, more flashbacks. But no, I'm looking forward to it. So. I wish I get annoyed by the whole, they're right now announcing, you know, this fall Bloodshot series. They're announcing this fall X-Men Manowar series. Why don't you wait till the current series wraps up before you start announcing the next series? And this is like the second or third time they've done this with X-Men Manowar. It's like the last week's issue was the penultimate issue of X-Men Manowar, and you've been talking about this upcoming series for, you know, a few weeks now. It's like, give me a break. Like, give it some time. There's no excitement if I'm still reading it for the previous run. And I'm sure it'll be, you know, good, whatever, but I'm not excited for it. There hasn't been any sort of, like, gap or whatever.
Yeah, that's
true. And you're also kind of betraying the current story. They're getting to the point of wrapping up a story, and you're already ignoring that and talking about
what's coming next.
The next thing.
It's a marvelous plan.
Again, other characters, why do we have to have X-O Manowar straight through since the launch of Valiant?
Yeah, that's like the only one that hasn't had any break.
Neither is Bloodshot.
Yeah.
Bloodshot straight through, I think, since the launch of Valiant. Maybe there's a little break with Bloodshot, but not long. But the rest, like, they've done a good job, like, kind of, you know, have it come out, go away for a little bit, come back. But X-O Manowar, especially, it's been a constant.
Well, the ability for Valiant to tell time jump stories anyway, they really could do that.
And that's not to say that there's been a dip in quality in those books. Like, you had the Venditti X-O Manowar, which is great. You have the Matt Kent X-O Manowar, which has been great.
Who's doing the new series?
I forget who's on the new one. But, like, the quality has been there. It's just, you know, you don't have to... If you're going to have them be constant, then just continue the number.
Don't end it and then start a new series. Just have it.
But don't start announcing new series and step on the current series and kill any hype. It's just
another marvelous idea.
Yeah. Yep.
Hardy har har har. That's the end of the questions.
This is the end.
So. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first, because I read one anyway.
Okay. I think I read that same book.
Well, I didn't really read it.
But you read it. You looked at the pictures.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued now.
Batman. I read the last two pages where there was, like, words. But essentially it was Batman chasing someone throughout Gotham City, and it was the Joker. But it's not really the Joker, because this is all part of the nightmares.
For the record, my favorite silent issue was... the Batman issue. Either Batman or Detective after Robin died.
That one was good, too.
Yeah.
The Pizza Dog issue of Hawkeye was pretty good, too.
Not silent. Indecipherable.
Technically silent, though.
There are no words.
There's no words.
Barks are not silent. Well, just saying.
Silent issue of G.I. Joe, there was noise in the background.
I always say that because... the way he did the dog's communication, like, there was symbols in there, if I recall. So you could still kind of decipher what the dog was trying to communicate.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. So, there's not much to say about a Batman book that doesn't say anything.
It looks pretty. The art was fantastic.
Oh, absolutely.
And
the
sequential storytelling was fantastic.
Yeah.
You didn't need the words.
Right.
It was a great...
Yeah. No, you could follow that.
Yeah.
That was, what, Lee Weeks again?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lee Weeks is incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. When he's on the...
All those guys are. There was an awesome picture of Clay Mann thanking Detective because he got the little thing from DC, which was like two bottles or something in the glass. But in the back, was a picture of Tom King, and then there was a batarang stuck in his forehead sticking out of it. And it was very funny. And then Tom King went, "Oh, I see you got my new script." So that was very funny.
So that's what I read.
I thought that was funny. That was it? That's all you read? Okay. Dave?
Sorry, I didn't books come out last week.
Or I can talk. I'll go. I won't wrap it up. I'll start now. Okay. Spider-Man Life Story number one. This is Chip Zdarsky, and it was Mark Bagley art.
Yeah.
I'm not the biggest fan of Mark Bagley. I love his anatomy. I don't like his faces. But basically what they're doing is each issue is retelling Spider-Man's story by decade. So this one was in the 60s. It was set 4 years after he became Spider-Man, which made me really happy that we didn't go through another retelling of his origin.
Not Uncle Ben.
Right. Of course, J. Jonah is, you need better pictures, and he's trying to get Gwen's attention, and she's kind of dismissing him, and Flash is going off to join the army, and they're having a big going-away party, and he kind of is a little...
Wait, recently they made that a thing, but, like, back in the original...
I don't think so, not that I remember, and it was definitely he was going to Vietnam.
Yeah.
And Spidey was kind of questioning whether he should go or not, since he had the powers and he could be really effective over there, and is it his duty to go? And he runs into Captain America, who basically tells him, no, it's not his duty to go. Which was, good. And
what's his duty?
Just,
You're saving people here.
Yeah, yeah. But he kind of confronted...
Pat gets it.
He confronted Flash at the bar with the going away thing. Only because, you were such a bully. Now you're being a hero. But, back then you were merciless towards me and stuff. And then he made the point of, I want to be more like Spider-Man and stuff. So that was kind of neat. And then it ends where actually Cap is in Vietnam at the very end. But it was good. But I'm just not a... I don't know if Bagley's doing all of them.
I think he is.
Is he?
Yeah.
Okay. Not horrible. I'm just not a huge
awesome covers.
Fan. Zdarsky did the covers, and they are good. This one was him on the with the web attached to a Huey going by helicopter. The next one for 70s, there's a disco ball.
That's a pumpkin.
Yeah. So, but it was good. It brought up, it had the Green Goblin and also the fact that of Norman's mental issues and things like that. So it was good. It was
Norman
good.
Has mental issues?
He does. He does. I know. Believe it or not.
No.
They even gave him the old, like him and Harry,
the good old wavy hair. Yeah. I still love when somebody posted a picture they found on the internet of a guy who actually had that hair, and they're like, okay, it's not just completely made up. This guy just had that same hair.
Or did that guy copy it all?
I don't think so. It looked, fairly natural. Dark Red. I don't know if anybody read this. This was from Tim Seeley from Aftershock. And it's about this vampire living in the, I think, North Dakota or something. Just, and he works nights at a convenience store. Of course, the first day, a guy throws up and he has to clean it up, but that means he's working late and he doesn't get home in time and he starts burning up in the car and has to climb inside. There's this girl in town who, I guess, like, has some disease where she overproduces blood, so she goes to him, and that's how he feeds. And she's like, why don't you just turn me? He's like, no, you don't want me to do that. And then at the end, he gets attacked by these people who, I guess, can kind of smell him out or something as being a vampire, and some, like, big vampire person is showing up in town because he's apparently somehow important. So, but it was really good. Sold out. It's going to a second print. It was the hot book last week. And then there was this little book by a company called Cave Pictures, which they were at the meeting, and I kind of wanted to say to them I didn't like their name only because Cave Pictures Media or whatever it is sounds like a movie studio, not a, their idea is the cave drawings. I'm like, you might have wanted to go on Cave Drawings, but because it sounds like a movie studio trying to do comics, but it's not. But they did one called The Blessed Machine. That was really, really good. Humanity did something. It was like a Haladon Collider type thing, and it went horribly wrong, exploded. The explosion then affected the atmosphere, and basically they had to create underground living because the atmosphere was going to be inhabitable
very soon after what happened. So they did that, and everybody had lived is now living underground. And they created this AI to help them. And basically, and it ended up becoming almost like godlike. And people worshipped it, and it ran everything. And this one guy, kid starts having dreams about it. And it was really good. He just kind of started questioning it. And he runs meets this girl who's also part of this group that questions it. And he ends up finding something that shows that the atmosphere should only be inhabitable for 40 years. And then he kind of looks up and goes, but wait, that was 100 years ago. So it's like something is keeping them underground and nobody knows what's going on up top. And is it habitable and can they move up and things like that. So it was really very interesting. From a real small publisher, just a little book, but really good. I do think I have more coming in Thursday. But yeah, really neat little book. I was very impressed by it. So that's all I got. Dave.
Edgar Allan Poe's.
I tried to read it and Snifter, I had to sell my copy. I was very disappointed.
Snifter of Terror, number 6. This is the final issue.
Yep.
Of the first volume.
With an awesome Goldfinger cover.
Yeah.
Because it's a wraparound. And in the front, it's him laying there covered in gold. And then when you go over, it's got his bare butt. It's funny.
The main story is by Mark Russell, The Tragic Tale of Frank and Cherry, another one of his serial stories, and it's absolutely hilarious. It takes place in the 1800s, and Frank and Cherry, you know, he's going to battle somewhere on this, on a sailing ship, and he gets kidnapped by the Captain Crackle, and chopped up and reanimated, and you know, there's versions of Toucan Sam and Fruit Brute and Lucky, the Lucky Charms leprechaun, and the dialogue's hilarious. They're going to Fort Honeycomb, and Captain Crackle says, "Fort Honeycomb's big."
And yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he says, "Aye, 'tis not small." That's my sense of humor. It's really funny. He did a great job.
Well, I know he was doing I want to say it was Frankenberry, but he was doing fan fiction on Facebook and writing these stories. And someone was a friend of a comic editor who was seeing it because, like, he would like it, and the friend would see it, and that's how he got his in. So it's just funny that he's revisiting that for this.
Yeah, it was great.
I think it was Frankenberry, but it was one of those.
Yeah, I think it was Frankenberry.
There's another story in there, too, called William Wilson, Inc. It's about a guy who owns a big company, but he's married with two kids, but he also has a mistress, and he thinks he's missing out on life by being married. So someone tells him about this company called that makes clones. So he decides to get a clone of himself made to spend time with his wife, but things do not go as planned, of course.
Snifter of Terror, things did not go
well. Lots of betrayals. That was a great story too. Criminal.
You know what? I took it home. I just didn't. I didn't get to it. The previews order is due Thursday, and so I spent all day Sunday and Monday working on that.
By Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. This does continue the second issue 2, about this story about the comics industry and this famous artist Hal Crane and his former apprentice Jacob, who's supposed to look after him at this convention where he's going to receive a lifetime achievement award, and Hal has roped Jacob into stealing some original art of his that was stolen from him. They find out where it is in this guy's apartment, and they get this other guy, Ricky Lawless, to help them break into the apartment. And he's related to another character who has been in some other criminal books. There's always connections, even though you don't need to know that at all by reading the book. So Ricky poses as a UPS salesman to break into this guy's apartment. And then they're off to the convention where there's some shenanigans. But man, Edward Rieger, it doesn't do justice how the story and the depth of these characters.
Yeah, first part was really good.
Ed Brubaker is telling, it's just in their lives and how they've been, you know, kind of destroyed by being in the comic industry. And it's just, it's really good. It's really well done. Black Badge, number 8. I'm really loving this series.
Yeah, I want to read that one in trade, I think.
It's really, I don't know if there's a lot happening, but it does always keep my interest. And I want to know more about these characters. The Black Badge has won the Rainbow Badge Jamboree, so now they get 2 weeks off of R&R, so you get to see their home lives. Because they all go back to the different homes. One of the characters living in a nunnery. Another one goes home to see just in time for their mom to die. Another one's living in a orphan's home in New England. And the story's told by the Honor Society, the SIEB organization, has infiltrated the White Badge troop. And this whole story is told by through the White Badge's spying on the Black Badges to see how much of a threat each of them are. And we learn more about what it takes, you know, what the Black Badges look for. They look for orphans to be a Black Badge and their psychological profiles. And there's a death at the end that really shakes things up.
Okay.
And that's going to have repercussions. So I'm really, really loving that series. And do you want me to save Lazarus for you, Joss? Did you read that?
Go for it.
Lazarus, Risen, number 1. It's been like almost 2 years, I think.
No.
I think it has.
No way. It has not been almost 2 years. I think the last one came out.
And I'm not counting that Lazarus X plus 66 book. But
yeah, but they had some after that. They had a couple issues after that. Yeah, I want to say,
wasn't it moving into like a quarterly or something like that?
I think the last issue was last summer, actually.
Really?
And I think it's been less than a year.
Okay.
It seemed like a while because I thought they were going to start the quarterly in the fall.
Yeah.
And then they didn't. Yeah. They waited until the spring.
But yeah, it's a quarterly now, Spencer. A lot of great extras in there.
So what's nice is,
is it bigger?
Yeah, like, they're doing a square bound, quarterly issue, and the main story in it is now I think like 44 pages.
Yeah.
So essentially, it's like two of the previous issues in terms of the size almost,
mm-hmm.
And then they have. Like this one had a short story in it, prose short story that kind of fit into the universe of Lazarus, which is kind of cool. They had some extra like back matter in it. It had some stuff that tied in like the Lazarus RPG.
Yeah,
I guess it's out there. They had a lot of content.
It was definitely worth
like a well put together, you know, almost like a magazine kind of issue.
Yeah.
The story itself picks up, like
it's 2 years later.
Yeah,
right?
A couple years in the future. Things are not going great for their family, Carlisle family.
Yeah.
It seems like there's been some shifting alliances with it, but also within the family itself, like Forever and Joanne are kind of now more aligned, and Forever knows about like the different secrets that have been going on, and she's kind of, you know, off the meds that the family's using to keep her under control. But it was good. If you know, hopefully anyone that was reading Lazarus before stuck with it and picked this up, because it picks up like it transitions into this new format pretty smoothly. I thought it worked.
Yeah, it's so dense with the material, and it's
I don't feel like the main story is dense, though.
No, you're right.
Like, so it's not one that I feel like I, you know, read a page and I'm going, like, what did I just read?
Yeah. Oh, the human stuff is great. I could, you know, certainly understand, you know, Forever wants to meet this new Lazarus. And, I mean, that's so visceral.
The next Forever, the clone of Robert, whatever.
Which, I remember back, that was like a giant surprise to me when they had those, when you found out that she would, that wasn't like a flashback.
Yeah. Yeah, you found out there's been
forever,
nine that, of them so
yeah,
far.
Yeah, yeah. That was a great reveal earlier in the series. But man, it was really well done. I really liked the book.
Mm-hmm. No, it's been great. I'm glad it's back.
Glad it's back. So next one in July, I think.
Yeah, 3 months from now.
Okay. That's all I got. Spencer.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 92. A good chunk of this issue is negotiations between Splinter and Shredder's like great 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 super great granddaughter for leader of the Foot Clan, and they almost come to agreement to everything, but recently the Foot Clan came in possession of these orphans. They took these orphans in and are like raising them and stuff. And whenever the granddaughter takes over, she wants to, you know, train them into being, you know, members of the Foot Clan. And Splinter didn't want that. You know, they just wanted them to, you know, take care of them. And then, you know, when they get older, they can either leave, or if they choose to join, they can join if they want to. That obviously didn't go well. They almost got into a, you know, huge fight between the two of them, but they end up leaving him in. So I imagine this is what's going to be the driving force for the city at war arc that's getting ready to start, that I think is leading up to the 100th issue of the series. But another one, and then Miles Morales, Spider-Man number 4. This issue, him and one of his roommates convinced him to skip school for the day because at this museum, I forget if it's just Biggie lyrics or just like famous rappers. Like,
why doesn't hang out with you anymore?
lyrics.
I just find it hilarious that he works at the librarian.
You know, all their lyrics and stuff hanging up in the museum.
He was here last night.
Yeah.
He's coming Friday, too.
So they go, so him and his roommate and the girl that he, I don't know if they're actually dating or they're kind of dating.
The anger's disappeared.
Let Spencer get through his damn book.
I just kind of just keep on chugging through.
Just keep on the field.
Yeah. But so anyways, while they're at the museum, they get attacked by, like, this weird, like, pharaoh, like, super villain. So he has to change into Spider-Man, takes him out. His buddy, who stayed at school, texts him down that the vice principal is looking for them. So they have to, in a very kind of, like, Ferris Bueller day off, kind of have to rush back to the school before getting caught. They make it back. But then it turns out by the end of the issue, when the weekend rolls around, he ends up actually getting a cold and being sick, so he can't do what he was planning that weekend. Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man number 4. This wraps up the first story arc with those like little kids in the underground city, and it appears that the ruler of that has some kind of deal with like the leaders up top, because Spider-Man calls his new detective friend, you know, to warn him that, hey, you know, there's about to be some dangerous things coming up. You probably want to send some police, you know, to try to, and her police chief won't let her, you know, investigate. But Kingpin ends up showing up because he's the mayor, convinces, you know, him to leave, and so, you know, the kids get to stay there with their mother, but the last page is Aunt May telling Peter that they need to have a talk, so it seems like she's finally going to tell her about having feeling a lump, and I guess if she has cancer or not. They haven't really got back to much of that after the first issue. Uncanny X-Men number 14. So Cyclops reaches out to one of their friends who work in the government and is basically tries to make this deal with them that, you know, if there's any, groups out there that you need, you know, that aren't too friendly to, you know, mutants or humans alike, you know, to, you know, let us know and we'll be able, you know, try to, you know, take them out. So we kind of have, like, this, like, backdoor deal with, like, the government, and then they will kind of, like, look out for them, too, if, you know, if they do these things. And
Colin likes backdoor deals, too.
Yeah. So, anyways.
Continue.
I didn't do anything.
No. No one did.
nobody did. That's why it's funny.
Cyclops also goes to visit the Morlocks and find that a good amount of them have been tortured and taken out. And I forget the guy's name. It's like his whole like low jaws, like a big kind of like flame thing that he covers up with like a scarf.
Chamber.
Because I guess he's the leader of the Morlocks at the moment.
Okay.
That's what I read. That was a big deal. The Chamber was back.
Yeah, and then so they.
He was from Generation X.
Yeah.
Generation X.
Yeah. Or Next X. Yeah.
So they, with his help, they go to take out like you know this group that you know that's been terrorism, and now it looks like he might join the group now. Like I said I've been really enjoying this series, and I'm worried about what the Hickman effects. You know, it's going to have on this book, you know, so...
They haven't released any information about the Hickman stuff at all.
No, just the teaser. That's all they said, yeah. Just two books, so... We'll see where that goes.
And then I'll end with Nightwing number 58.
Rick, on the loose.
Yes. This is getting better. I noticed...
Like a porno tagline.
I noticed in the credits that, they have, like, Scott Lodero's only, like scripting or, like, laying out, and there's another writer. I forget his name.
Oh, yeah, no,
Port of Earth guy.
Yeah, Zach Kaplan.
Yeah. So.
Did a little video giving us a shout out. I remember seeing his. He was going to be on that.
Port of Earth is coming back. I saw the previews.
Yep.
So,
Eclipse, I think, I just ordered the last issue. Or he's mentioned he just wrote the last issue.
Oh, really? That's ending already?
Eclipse, I think, yeah.
It has been getting better, just, like, with the writing and storytelling, and they seem to have settled on, like, a better artist, too.
No offense.
Yeah, well...
All offense?
Yeah.
All offense.
Hater. Jeez.
And, you know, I'm particular about my dick. You guys know this. Am I Rick?
I don't want to sit next to Spencer anymore.
So he's not Nightwing yet, but he's in the Nightwing. So, but this issue there, Joker's daughter has did something to like this politician man. Messed up his face somehow and strapped his bomb chest and, like, made him go into, like, this fancy, kind of high-class restaurant where, you know, these rich upper-class people are at because of what they're doing to, like, everybody else, you know. But with the group, they're able to, stop her. Rick Grayson is, with his trusty rope now because his main weapon's, like, a rope now. Is able to get, like, the detonator off of her, and they're able to disable the bomb, but she gets away, and then it ends with, like, a nice scene that, Barbara's getting ready to leave Bloodhaven, and she gets him to give him a ride in the taxi to the airport, and they just have, like, this nice conversation about, like, I might have known, you know, Dick, but you are, you know, a new person, and if he knew you, he'd be proud of who you are and, like, that kind of stuff. So they kind of had, like, this nice moment there at the end of the book. But like I said, it seems like it's kind of finally starting to get better, so they're probably going to cancel it here soon. But that's it. Josh?
That's it.
That's it.
Well.
Okay, that's... Oh, sorry.
That's fine. I mentioned before, Exo Manowar is the penultimate issue of that. This is good. I've really enjoyed Matt Kent's run on Exo. The past few issues, he has been up against those bounty hunters. The encounter when he was on that other world, where he was the emperor, and they were kind of hired to overthrow him. So the two remaining bounty hunters came after him and somehow were able to counteract his armor, and his armor is now on the fritz, not doing well against his weapons. But Shon ended up showing up on Earth and essentially came to his rescue. And he thinks initially he's happy to see her, thinks that maybe she just came to save him, but she really came to save her planet, because her concern was that these hunters were going to find him, get the armor, and then bring the armor and possibly Eric back to her planet and cause even more issues and war there, when they're still trying to figure things out now that the three factions on that planet are part of this council and trying to coexist. So she shows up, and she is able to use the Exo armor, because back early in this run, Eric made her a ring from a sliver of his armor, and it worked with her. So that ring is enabling her to essentially have her own version of the armor. So this issue is pretty much a long, drawn-out fight between these two bounty hunters and Eric and Shon. Which doesn't really go well for either side. There's no clear winner. It's pretty brutal. Two hands from different people got lopped off in this issue in pretty grotesque fashion.
And say it was an Exo's other hand, was it?
No. Eric did not lose a second hand. Uh-huh. So, out of the other three people, one died, two lost hands. I won't tell you who.
Yeah, because I trade weight on that.
It's
Bob and Terry in films. I won't tell you who died.
And the end of the issue kind of sees Shon stranded on Earth. One of the bounty hunters managed to steal her ring. And he didn't get Eric's arm, but the ring was enough. So he left with that. She thinks she's stuck there. Eric makes her a bracelet to use. And says, as the issue ends, that she can now leave and go home if she wants to, but he hopes that she doesn't. And it's cool, because he's at a point right now where he's kind of lost everything. Like, the Venditti run ended where, Eric had gotten married, he was the leader of his people, he had a kid, and then we see the Matt Kent run start up, and Eric is on this faraway planet, and we find out that his child died, and his wife blamed him for the death of his child, and then he went to this far-off world and set him to life as a farmer with this woman, Shon, and got conscribed into the war that was going on there, and eventually became the leader, and then overthrown, and then sent back to Earth to people that didn't want him, and he's kind of, a man without a home right now, and seeing this kind of moment with her, and where she is hesitant to really, get back in anything with him, but seeing him kind of, hoping that there's some sort of glimmer for him, and to have something, which is good. It's been great, character development throughout this whole run, so... Sorry to see it end, but
sure it'll be back.
But not Matt Kent. I'm looking forward to the last issue.
So he's been working his way through just about every Valiant character for the most part. He's had a big.
But I think this is his. I think this is different with Valiant. I think he's done after this.
Yeah. So I haven't seen him really on any
Yeah, because I think he's another one that whenever Dinesh and then Warren. Left the company, kind of decided that was the end of it for their his involvement, like same with Jeff Lemire.
Which is a shame because like they've like he's done like they're saying has done some pretty good work for that company and some of that.
Yeah, but they were like, I was very worried about what was going to happen with Valiant whenever those changes happened, and for the most part, they've still been the books have still been on course for what they've you know how they have been. Like this, the next book I'll talk about, The Life and Death of Toyo Harada, brings back Josh Dysart, who did Harbinger whenever Irvine relaunched.
Yeah.
That other book, the Psy book, whatever it's called, the Psy Lords.
Mm-hmm. That's coming?
Yeah. That has Fred Van Lente.
Oh, nice.
So they have a book with Colin Bunn, I think. Mm-hmm.
Wait, Colin Bunn's in a book?
Fallen World, I think.
One or two.
But, like, they're
he's
still
now
getting,
covered every publisher.
Yeah, they're still getting, you know, decent people to you know, on their creative team, so. Life and Death of Toyo Harada. This is a good first issue. I guess this is just a mini-series.
Is he alive or dead?
He's alive.
Okay.
Yeah, he's alive, and I'm guessing the title alludes to...
Do people know
that
he's alive?
Yes. We're going to see the downfall of him or the death of him in this book, maybe.
Until he comes back.
Yeah, who knows? Here's the thing. We've seen... And I comic publishers shouldn't do this because it never works out the way they hope it will. Like, we saw flash-forwards in the Valiant Universe where he's around. We also saw flash-forwards where Exo-Manowar, you know... We see his final days, and his final days look like he was with his wife and his family from before, and clearly that didn't work out. So I wish they wouldn't do these flash forwards and say, like, this is definitively where the future of this is going. But so we get to see some flashbacks of Toyo Harada, his, you know, like when he was born in Japan, and right before Japan entered into World War II. And see kind of the origin of his abilities or what sparked his abilities to come out. So he was in Hiroshima during the bombing, and just as, like, there were explosions going off, that's whenever suddenly his powers manifested and protected him, but he, you know, watched his mother die at the same time, and in that moment decided that he was going to do whatever was in his power to make sure wars like that couldn't happen again. So his whole thing, and throughout every, you know, series we've seen with him, his intentions are always kind of good. It just the way he goes about it is always pretty heinous. So he wants to see a complete balance of power, where you don't have, you know, one nation that is struggling to feed its people while another nation has these massive weapons of war. So he wants to try and balance things out, so there's no real, you know, nothing really to gain or no real advantage to, you know, take on these wars. So he is, in the present day, he's trying to, with his, you know, ragtag group that he has, build this space elevator and use it to salvage debris that's in, like, this debris field ring around the planet from... different alien incursions, like the Vine and whatnot, and use that alien technology to kind of, you know, prop up some of these other nations, and again, like I said, balance power. So as they're trying to conduct this operation, different nations are trying to stop him, so we're getting to see them fight off the assaults from different fronts. His team is working, you know, they're very strapped for resources, but they're working like a well-oiled machine. This issue does a good job of kind of showcasing everyone that's on his team. And a lot of people we saw from that Toyo Harada focus book from a while back. I can't remember what the name it was, though. The one that, like, sort of, like, right after Harbinger ended. I'm not thinking of the name of this right after the podcast, I'm sure. And then we find out that someone on his team is actually, you know, betraying him. They think that he is the... he's very, very weak for a position for a person that's in his position of power, and his stance needs to be stronger. And they disagree with how he's handling things, so they decide to send a message to these opposing forces to say that they're going to give him information on how to take down Toyo Harada once and for all. So that's at least leads me to think that we might see his downfall in this, but I'm sure it's going to get to the end and we'll see some downfall. I don't think it's going to be his actual death, though. Going along with the Valiant Train incursion with the Eternal Warrior fulfilling his duties of being the protector of the Geomancer for the first time in quite a while. Although she's dying, so not doing a great job. So
he never did a great job, right?
He sucks. He's an eternal loser.
You have one job.
So he is essentially going up against his opposite right now. And the
creepy face-opening thing?
No, not that thing. But I guess that's really his opposite. But he's going up against this... this being that deals a lot with necromancy, and she seems to see these necrotic, I think that's the right word, maybe necrotic energies in different worlds, and then eventually once it's, you know, developed enough, she harvests this energy, thus killing like all life on those worlds. So she does this by using this girl who seems to be able to, you know, control these energies, which this girl kind of is like the opposite of the Geomancer, who has the, you know, power of like the earth and life, and she has the opposite effect. So they're going from planet to planet, and this woman is using this to sustain herself and end up coming to Earth because they realize with the Geomancer and the Geomancer having a direct link to Earth, they can see these energies in the Geomancer and then eventually harvest just the Geomancer, thus allowing to harvest all the energy from the whole planet due to her link. So all the good effects of it without having to go through the tedious process of, you know, harvesting the entire planet when they can just harvest one person and get all the benefits. So Galad is trying to figure out a way to cure this sickness that's now in Tama and stop this foe. He goes to Dr. Mirage, since she is well versed with the dead and death, and she presents him options that none of them are that great. And he has to go to the dead side to try and, you know, find a way to possibly cure Tama, but also then lead to their next phase where they're going to try and sever her connection with the Earth, which could lead, you know, one of them to being killed in the process. I'm guessing Tama, because if the Earth dies, then everything dies.
Yeah.
But it was good. This is a really good issue. I think the first issue of this, I was a bit skeptical, and if I recall, I had a couple issues with the art, but this issue was great, so things all seem good. And I think, oh no, the last one I'll mention is High Level from Vertigo.
You know what, I'm waiting for more. I sold out, so I'm waiting for more to come. I really like the first one.
I really like this.
Sadly, I don't think they're going to go back to print on it.
Yeah, wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
There'll probably be a trade at some point.
Yeah. The problem is it had a Matina variant, so that sold like crazy, so I didn't order that level because the second one didn't.
Yeah.
But still blew through, so. Yeah, last week was a lot of, yeah, take that out of my bag, Tim, take, so I didn't read I lost a lot, like Edgar Allan Poe I was going to read, mm-hmm. and that one, so I know I have another copy coming tomorrow. So
in this issue, the main character is this girl, she's like this smuggler and scavenger named 13, she has these, like, cybernetic augments, and these, this guy she knows from her past, who's part of this group called the Black Helix, he ended up running from them. And the reason why is because they were using this young girl as a weapon. She has these abilities. So they were using her in this war up in the northern regions. And I don't say abusing her, per se, but definitely taking advantage of her abilities and just using them for their own personal gain. And this group that people initially thought were like the ragtag kind of renegades then became the oppressors in this battle. So he ends up fleeing with her and is trying to get her back to her home in this place called High Level, thinking that if he can return her to where she came from, then that will essentially bring an end to the war, because it's going to balance that power back out again. So he goes to this girl 13 thinking that she can, you being the smuggler and scavenger that she is, she can be the one that could successfully get her back to this, you know, this region. And she's very reluctant to do it at first. She doesn't want to get involved. She doesn't want to venture into the northern territories where this war is going on. And he's sort of convinced that the war is coming to the south, whether, you know, she was there or not. The only way to possibly stop is by carrying out this mission. So she agrees, and she's going to get $100,000 to do it. We find out she only agrees because someone she knew was going to be traveling to High Level to set up shop there. So she offers to split the money with him, and if he takes the girl with him. And as they're, you know, dealing with that, suddenly this Black Helix group, which the guy from before was supposed to try and lead away from their region, they show up in their encampment and know that the girl's there and start laying waste and setting fire to things, massacring people that are there. So she runs with the girl, and they manage to get away from the immediate threat, but now her only option is to go on this kind of trek with the girl to get her back to High Level. But it's really cool. The art's fantastic. Barnaby Bagenda is on the art with this. He did The Omega Men with Tom King, which is a gorgeous book. But it's a really cool, like, kind of futuristic punk, you know, story. The art's great. It flows, you know, really well. There's no, like, the pacing's great. There's no, like, dense dialogue or anything with it at all. It all seems to work really well. And just, it's a, you know, it's just a fun book. So I would recommend checking out if you are into, like, you know, kind of futuristic, you know, slightly post-apocalyptic, like, sci-fi kind of stories. And that's it.
All right, go.
Okay.
What's coming out next week?
Oh! Well, next week, we have Amazing Spider-Man 18 Who.
Who?
Amber Blake, which is a new one from IDW. Avengers No Road Home number 8. This is going to 10. We have Black Hammer, 45 from the world of Black Hammer, number 2. Bronze Age Boogie, which I believe is a new one from Ahoy.
Yeah, oh, great.
So, hang on. Fingers aren't working. There we go. Conan the Barbarian number 5, so at least they're hitting this one on schedule. Jim Henson's Storyteller Sirens. This Jim Henson stuff has been doing quite well. And Pat, I know you are giddy about this one. And when I say giddy, I mean giddy.
Yeah?
Major X number 1.
Major X?
That's the new Rob Liefeld X-Men book.
Oh, okay.
We have finally Marvel Action Black Panther number 1. This is supposed to come out back in January. And we were kind of joking because in the new previews that's due tomorrow, we're ordering number 5. And number 1 still hasn't shipped.
That's going to be difficult.
Yeah, Marvel Team-Up number 1. This is I think it's a Ms. Marvel Team-Up book, and she's teaming up with Spider-Man in this one.
Which Spider-Man?
Peter. Monster-Sized Chilling Adventures of Sabrina number 1. This is basically a small trade collecting, I think, the last 3 issues that came out after the trade. So,
in other words, the last 3 issues.
The last 3 issues, right. But since it wasn't enough to make a full trade, they're doing a little baby trade.
Or a story arc.
True. Section 0, number 1. This is one from Image. Stiletto number 1. This is a Dark War... Or no, this is... shoot, who's... I didn't want to say Lion Forge is doing this one. Officer Down, basically it's a story of a police officer who... Some police officers were guarding a witness, and they were murdered, and the witness is gone, and he's investigating and discovers that it's inside the police station corruption. So, but it's by Pally Schmidt, who did a book a while ago called The Devil's Concubine that I enjoyed, so I'm kind of happy he's back doing something. War of Realms, number 1. We're doing a... No, we're not doing the midnight release. Sorry, I can't do 2 weeks in a row. That would kill me. no, all offense. But War Realms is next week. We'll have a ton of covers because I kind of did go nuts and ordered a bunch of the covers. A lot of them, just very few. So if you're looking for something, let me know. But the list will be up on the website and on the app. That's about it. I mean, there's tons of stuff, just not a lot of new. So that's going to be the first week of April. Previews orders are due Thursday. So if there's anything you want, please let me know. I wrap it up tomorrow night, and I'm not sitting there constantly refreshing to see if any new orders or emails have come in. So book club is Friday. We're doing Paper Girls. I do still have copies if you want to come. It's a good time. That's about it. We're just about to wrap up Boom Studios month. Boom. So just as a thank you to them and to reward them for doing a good job and winning the Comics Pro award for not being best awesome company, but it was you know, friends of the industry kind of thing.
Not being a DB award.
True. but so that's all we got.
Not a distinguished buddy
either. It is not. No, it is not. So as always, you can find me here at the store. The website's PittsburghComics.com. Facebook is Pittsburgh Comics. Twitter and Instagram are at PGH Comics. So I'm going home to sleep because I'm tired. And let's see. Dave.
That's a podcast.
We will talk at you next week. See ya.
Bye.